Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante with a very special guest today. We have member of the Board of Trustees at Penn State, Anthony Lebrano. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
You know, we came up Wednesday, Wall Street Journal came out with an article talking about the $700 million renovation of Beaver Stadium. So I thought this would be an appropriate time to have you on, talk to you about that stadium renovation, everything going along with it. But to help me out and our listeners a little bit, if you don't mind, I'd like to kind of start at the beginning, get the background on how we got to where we are now with this approval for the big renovation. So I guess my starting point is, how did this begin? Is there somebody, and who is it at the university who says, hey, you know what? We need to do something about the stadium, whether it's a new stadium, a big renovation. When did that happen? Who did it?
Well, Jim, that's a loaded question.
Okay.
The fact is that this process began many, many years ago, predating the current administration. For years, the university was lax in its maintenance on its athletics facilities. And that was in large part due to what happened in 2011 and the fine that was levied against the university, which was ultimately borne by the athletics department, that ushered in the era of Sandy Barber. And unfortunately, beginning in 2012, our ability to raise money began to trail our history. Up until that point, we had no issue with philanthropy as it pertained to athletics. And quite candidly, our administration during that period didn't do a very good job. They didn't do a good job of stewarding our assets, and the Board of Trustees failed in its oversight. And I was on that board. I'd been on the board since 2012, having taken a two-year hiatus back in 2018. And so you fast forward, and over a course of a number of years, the proposition of Beaver Stadium was, well, you know, should we renovate it? Should we build a new one? And so we undertook a number of surveys, we being the administration. The end result of that was that nothing was ever formally or informally presented to the Board of Trustees. Sandy Barber, I think, and Eric Barron decided they weren't going to move forward at that time. And Sandy and Eric both departed, and we now have a new administration, and that new administration decided that, you know, we need to move forward with some things. And one of those things was Beaver Stadium. The maintenance backlog was, you know, probably $90 million, although they want to tell you it was more than $200 million. I don't think that's an accurate assessment. And so 2 years ago, it'll be 2 years ago next month, at a retreat for the trustees, we were presented with easels on which there were options, and we were asked as trustees to stand next to those, to the easel we thought represented the best direction. And most folks stood next to an easel that said public-private partnership. Now, of course, we had absolutely no information with respect to relative costs, other than we thought building a new facility was, you know, $1.5 billion proposition. Pat Kraft was now our athletics director. He was in the room, as was our president. And that's really when they began working on an approach to Beaver Stadium, a number of us were asking for information, and none of that information was ever forthcoming, although we were told we would have an opportunity to review options and discuss options and look at pro formas for those options. None of that happened. And over a two-year period, really, we kept being told that you're going to get something, you're going to get something. And then finally, earlier this year, I guess March, April timeframe, we saw some information. And then, of course, come May, we were asked to vote on what we ultimately did, which is to spend $700 million, but recognize that, I would liken this to what's known in a bankruptcy proceeding as a cram down, right? You know, this is your option. And they had the votes. You know, for me personally, you'll probably ask me this, but I'll tell you now. This wasn't so much about not renovating Beaver Stadium, but it was about the timing of it, given so many uncertainties surrounding college athletics. But that's the background. That's how we got to where we are. Pat Kraft, I think, really moved this forward and said, okay, we need to get this done. Now, whether or not he was getting pressure from anyone else, I can't say. I can only tell you that, as a trustee, I felt as though this was a cram down. So I voted not to move forward with this project at this time.
Well, prior to the $700 million vote and presentation, there was a $70 million approved and spent. What was that $70 million about?
Well, it was supposed to be for the maintenance work that had to be done immediately, the work that needed to be done to weatherize Beaver Stadium to allow for us to host college football playoff games should we have one at Beaver Stadium. It was never intended to be used for any renovations. It was also supposed to be used in large part for the architectural work, design work that they would undertake and then bring to us for review and approval. As it turned out, some $20 million, $21, $22 million of the 70 was used to begin the renovations in the south end zone, the student section, which in my view was complete contravention of the intention. They'll argue otherwise, but that money was never supposed to be used for a renovation. And if you look, just for comparison's sake, at Nebraska, when they started down their path, they had allocated, I think, a scant $5 million for their architectural work. Parenthetically, they've now scaled their project to address the uncertainties facing us in the world of college athletics. So, but that's what the intention was for the $70 million. It was supposed to be the architectural work, some of the immediate maintenance work, and the weatherizing work that had to be done. It was never supposed to be used for what it appears to have been used for.
The impression I got was the same as you, the architectural design and so on, which just tells me that I'm in the wrong profession. I should have become an architect if those are the kind of dollars you get.
You know what? That really should have been an indication that something wasn't right. And I wish I had been more astute at that moment to say, this is a lot of money for us to be committing for what is supposed to be maintenance and architectural design work. I guess I was acting in good faith and thinking they were going to do the same.
Well, I understand, and I've had board members say to me, we hired these people, meaning the administration, the people who do these things, when I've asked about the idea that, boy, it seems like it's things just get rubber stamped. They come to the board, you stamp it yes and move on. And I would think with especially a $700 million investment, heck, I would want to know more about $70 million, let alone $700 million. But again, going to the process, how does this happen where whoever it is says, okay, we want to find out what our options are. Now, for example, me personally, my house, when I built my house, that was the biggest investment I ever made. I went to a lot of different places to get a lot of different ideas, and the price ranges were crazy different, amazingly so to me, Anthony. I would think that that's how this was done. Did you go various places? Did you go get various numbers, various ideas? Because I hear like, okay, to build a new stadium was $2 billion. I mean, is that, did you go to one place? Did you go to five places? How did these numbers come about? I know I'm asking you like five different things. I apologize for that. But tell me about that process of coming up with how we did these different options.
I think the best way for me to answer that is to describe to you the response I once received from Bruce Springsteen. I had in my life the opportunity to spend a lot of time with Bruce. And one day I asked Bruce, how do you create the lyrics for your songs? And Bruce, he looked at me and then he took a stand and he went, you know, like pulls it out of the sky, right? Jim, honest to God, and I hate to be crass, but you know, I think in some of this we pulled it right out of our behinds. There were no studies presented to us with respect to building. There was no RFP. There's none of that that one would have expected in this process one would have followed. So when we said it's going to cost $2 billion, you know, we have a board member who has experience in building, and that board member shared the experience that member had in doing so. That's the extent of the depth of our research into building something. We weren't presented with options. You know, we were supposed to have a public-private option presented to us. And then we were told that it had been explored and determined to be unfeasible, but no one ever presented me with the analysis that I requested. I just show me what we did and let me see the empirical evidence, because, you know, we're told often, and you probably heard this from other trustees, we have to trust them. So, I'm from Kansas. You got to show me.
All right. That's going to be it for quarter number one. 1,000 more questions I have for you, Anthony, as soon as we come back.
Terrific.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante, our special guest, Anthony Lebrano from the Board of Trustees. We're kind of getting the reaction from Wednesday. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal about Penn State's $700 million investment in a renovation for Beaver Stadium. Anthony was prominently quoted in this article. I wanted to get him on our show. Before we get back to that, Anthony, you were given a question when I was asking you where some of these numbers came from, and you referred to a conversation you had with Bruce Springsteen. My friend, I need to start hanging out with you.
One day I'll tell you about my trip with him in 2008. He took me on tour to Barcelona. I got rock star. It was amazing.
I, you know what? I just want to sit down with some beers and hear that story. So promise me we will do that.
You have my word.
Okay. Now let's get back to this. Now you were talking about the the $2 billion number for the new stadium was the quote they put out there. Now, I had a, got a statement at one point from a, before any of the research was being done, any of the numbers come up with, we're not building a new stadium. We're renovating Beaver Stadium. That's the end of the discussion. So that was always in my head, that it seemed like there was a conclusion come to, and then we'll do everything else to get to that conclusion. Now, it's, I don't know. Maybe it's the right conclusion, but you mentioned the $2 billion that there's a member, I'm assuming you were talking about Terry Pegula, who's in the process of trying to build a stadium for the Buffalo Bills that he owns, an NFL stadium, and that's the kind of number that they talk about. I'll throw at you something I've brought up before. I did some research on other college football stadiums. It's not like a lot of them are being built right now, but South Florida is building a stadium. It's a 35,000-seat stadium. I know, much different. But the cost of that is going to be $350 million. Now, if you extrapolate numbers and say we want to build a 100,000-seat stadium, you know, dollar for dollar, apples to apples, that would be $1 billion, not $2 billion. And if anything, there should be an economy of scale that your per seat cost for 100,000 should be less than 35,000. I would think, Anthony, tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, there are other costs that you probably aren't considering, we're not aware of. And for example, Beaver Stadium steel structure, we're going to be removing that steel. What's it going to cost us to demolish? It's a much bigger facility than the one down there in South Florida. Now, is it going to cost us $100 million more, $200 million more? I don't know. Not likely, though. But again, we don't know, Jim. It's speculation because we were never given that analysis. Now, I will say to your point, I do agree that the decision to renovate was a predetermined decision. And I think it centered around the notion that we did not want to lose the what we thought was, we believe is an advantage of Beaver Stadium and its size, and the fact that, you know, there's just a lot of history there. So I do think that, you know, that the argument to build a new one was always going to be lost because of the nostalgia around Beaver Stadium.
All right. Well, let's go back then now to, it sounds like what you're saying is on the new stadium, there was some preconceived notions that we really don't want to build new, but we needed to put a number out there because people would ask. So we needed to do a comparison. So let's go back to the renovation. And were there specifications put out? Like, okay, we need to get information on what this will cost, and here's what we want done. Again, using the analogy, when I wanted to build a house, I said I needed X number of bedrooms, this size garage, so on and so forth. Is that how that process worked? And did you get quotes, estimates from multiple places?
No. We were never given any of that information. My best guess is, and it's a guess, but I don't know, because when we ask these questions, we're told that's the minutia and we have no business being in the minutia. Which is kind of funny when you think about it, but I don't know. I don't believe that happened. I believe we locked into a vendor, Populous, for dating back many, many years. And we were riding that horse all the way to the finish line. So Jim, I'm embarrassed to tell you, I don't know. I don't believe so, because I think if they had done that, they would have shared that information with us. Instead, we received a PDF with, you know, the multiple scenarios leading to the most likely scenario, which is that over the course of 30 years, we might make $43 million on an investment of $700 million. And mind you, with an athletics department that generates over $200 million a year over 30 years, that's a lot of revenue for us to only make $40 million. It's scary. It really is scary. But to answer your question, I'm not aware that we did that. If Populous did it, it wasn't shared with us. I'm doubtful. I know that when we asked for that sort of data, we were told that was too granular.
Okay, so now Populous, explain to our listeners who Populous is and where they fit into all of this.
Well, they're the architectural firm doing the design work for the stadium, and their principal is a gentleman named Scott Radicek, who played linebacker for Penn State back in the day. He's done a lot of work around Penn State over the course of the last two decades. And his firm has been intimately involved. I don't know that there was an RFP put out in the last few years for this project. I think, like I said, I think we locked and loaded with one firm. I'm told that way back when an RFP was sent, that the number they were using, and I think the Wall Street Journal article pointed to this, was somewhere in the order of what, $540 or $570 million. So I can't explain that. I can't explain the difference. I should be able to. I can't. You would have thought that as an administration, as a group, they would have come to us in the spirit of openness and transparency and shared all of this with us. They didn't. If you watched our call on the 27th of May, you saw that it was somewhat chaotic, and there was a little bit of dissension and a little bit of unrest, because there are a number of us who didn't believe as though we had an ample amount of time to discuss this, to deliberate this. And they, of course, argued that we had more than enough time to discuss and deliberate. So, very satisfying answer, I know.
Well, I'm glad to hear it from you, Anthony, because these were my suspicions, but I was looking to get them confirmed. Anthony, you say it's not a satisfying answer, but it does help me, because this is where my suspicions were. And my concern is, if you go to one place that's Populous, you're getting only one answer, and you're getting that answer from somebody with a vested interest.
Yes, you are. You are exactly right, my friend.
So did anybody say, you know what, we see all these numbers, we're not sure, that let's get a third party. Let's get a completely independent accounting firm to come in and just verify all these numbers. When you're talking about a $700 million investment, wouldn't that investment be a good one, Anthony?
Well, actually, that's what Alvin DeLevy was attempting to do by trying to put off the vote for a month, because we were told that the decision had to be made by the first week in July. And so Alvin's suggestion was to table the motion in front of us, which was to approve the $700 million, and give us a month to do exactly that. And, of course, you saw the outcome. They weren't interested, because their response was, we've had plenty of time to discuss, deliberate. We've answered all your questions. That was another interesting response. We've answered all your questions, as if there weren't a lot more questions to be answered. The fact is that we were given a PDF of a spreadsheet. That was the pro forma. And if you wanted to manipulate that data, you needed to physically input that data in your own spreadsheet. I think one of our members did that. And it was an interesting exercise, because what we found, if you predated the spreadsheet by a decade, you will have found that our administrative expenses in athletics were increasing at a rate of 6.5% a year, roughly. And in the pro forma we were given, we were told they anticipated those expenses to increase only at a rate of 2.5% per year for the next 30 years, which is really hard to swallow, because our track record in that area was so poor. But, you know, this was a fait accompli. You know, as I said at the beginning of our show, this was a cram down. They had their answer. They had their votes. And I know, Jim, you have other questions for me, but I just have to say that What disappoints me more than anything else is that there aren't other people on the board who weren't deliberative enough to say, hey, you know what? That's 30 years worth of data you're telling us you know today. Maybe we ought to just take a step back or take a little bit more time. But instead, it was, well, we've hired the administration to run this place. We have to trust them. You know, my response to them was, well, I trust them, but as Ronald Reagan said, you got to verify. And as part of our duty as trustees, we have to verify the veracity of the data we're given. And that's a hard pill for board leadership and other board members to swallow. They think that we're just supposed to step in line. You know, it's the old step and fetch. We use that expression, right? But I don't know if you people remember that show from years ago, but you got to step. You got to follow, toe the line that they've set for you. You can't ask those questions, and you can't dissent, because if you do, somehow you don't love Penn State.
And that's where I think, Anthony, you're really hitting the crux of the issues that I have from the outside looking in. And when we come back, I want to explore it a little more that, you know, hey, this is a $700 million investment, not $7,000. It's a huge investment. So just trust me, I'm not sure should cut it. We're going to explore that when we come back for quarter number three.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. My special guest is Anthony Lebrano from the Board of Trustees at Penn State. We are talking about this stadium renovation, $700 million going to go into it. And I think, Anthony, you finished up our last segment talking about, well, gee, if you ask questions, if you want to explore it more, you're not getting on board. You're not the Penn State fan. But my feeling is, Board of Trustees, it's your job to drill down. It's your job to say, hey, wait a minute, that $700 million, that's a big investment. That's coming from Penn Staters. That's coming from our alums, our ticket holders. We're going to be asking them for a lot of this money. Let's verify that it's being spent wisely. And I think it's not just I would assume it's part of the job. Now, to go further on this point, okay, it's $700 million. You're in that meeting. Are they telling you what you're buying for your $700 million, what you're getting as far as suites and upgraded seats and fancy restaurants? And what are we getting for our $700 million?
We have yet to see drawings of anything. We're told that there probably will be 10 $1 million suites and 25 seats in those suites. And there'll be an opportunity for corporate sponsorship. There'll be like 12,000 seats down in the bowl behind the visitor's bench. That will be loge seats. But there's no real specificity. You know, I'm a visual learner, so I need to see things. And none of that was forthcoming, which made this very frustrating for me. You would have imagined they would have said, here, you know, take a look. This is what we envision. But that wasn't the case. So I voted against it.
That you did. So, and I appreciate that you did as a Penn State alum. I want to know the value of these things. You mentioned new suites, and I understood that there'll be some high level ones, like 10 of them or so, that it's $1 million to start and then an annual fee. Did they go out and try to find out, is there a waiting list for those? Are there people?
They supposedly have had conversations with some folks, and there may be some people who have expressed an interest, but there's nothing yet formally committed to the best of my knowledge. I mean, I hope they're successful selling these things, but, you know, the devil's in the details, and in the absence of having that information, there's not very much you can do, you know. And I'll compare it to what we did over on the east side of the stadium in 2001, if you remember, when we added the suites. You know, there in 1998, when we began that project, I remember Tim Curley and others asked me if I would serve on that committee, and I agreed. And at that point, I think our spend was expected to be somewhere in the $90-95 million range. And we talked about the number of suites we would have, and we had a pretty good sense then of our ability to sell them, but we didn't know 100%, but we knew that when we were done, we would be able to repay the debt within just a few years, which is, you know, I think what we've done. I think anytime they did a project of that magnitude, I think the goal was to have everything repaid, you know, in a decade, because, you know, in a decade's time, you're going to be doing maintenance work. It's time to do something new. That wasn't the case here. You know, I mean, $1 million to throw, think about it. How many folks do we have that are willing to pay that? I don't think our base of fans is so deep that we have many of them who have the financial capacity to take on that commitment, let alone the desire. Right? It's just, we're not Columbus. We're not Ann Arbor. We don't have Fortune 500 companies surrounding us. Now, maybe the company they've hired to handle ticket sales, Elevate, is telling them they can do all these wonderful things for them. You know, there's going to be opportunities for people to get sponsorships for signage. And I don't know what that looks like. They haven't shared that with us either. Now, maybe the leadership has seen it, but I know the rank and file haven't seen any of those things. I don't know.
Well, Anthony, and there is precedent for this where, you know, with stadiums, you know, the personal seat licenses and so on, where you collect money before you build to ensure there is that kind of demand. And this was referenced in the Wall Street Journal article, what Nebraska did. They had, I think their project was 400 some million.
450.
But they, before we do that, we're going to go try to raise some money because 50%. Our math is saying we're going to get X dollars of donation money.
Yep.
So they went out and found out, oh, they didn't get that much. So they scaled back the project. Would it not have been smart to do something similar in some way? Hey, before I start building these million-dollar suites, let me pre-sell them. Hey, I need a deposit. Where is there that demand? Is there that waiting list for these type of items, the million-dollar suites?
Well, it's easy for someone to say, yeah, I'm interested, but it's a much harder for them to write the check.
That's the point. As soon as, you know, we have an old saying, you know, in sales, it's not sold until you get the check. And then someone will always say, it's not sold till you deposit the check. Okay.
The bank. Yeah.
And, you know, I look at it that way. And it's sort of, it's also a little bit disconcerting to me that when I'm being told $700 million is being spent, that you on the board of trustees were not told what is being spent on. I would think you'd get the details. Hey, this is what it means. X suites, X box seats, X, you know, number. So it's some pretty good detail. And again, I think it's even more disconcerting that you went to one person or one group to get an answer instead of, as you mentioned before, like an RFP, something to that effect, where, you know what, I comparison shop.
Well, we were told that they needed the flexibility so that if they can't sell 10 suites, then maybe it's only 6 and they realign the other seats. It's a hell of a way to attack a project of any size, let alone one of this magnitude. I like the fact that, you know, we're we've identified a need to give this place a facelift. I don't like the fact that we have so much uncertainty facing us in college sports today that we're willing to bet the house. And I think that's what we've done, because when we take on this debt, you know, that will put college, Penn State's athletics programs in debt to almost, you know, $1 billion. We'll be the most indebted athletics program in the country. And by the way, it's not as if Penn State Athletics is indebted. It's Penn State University. Okay, so Penn State Athletics is not a separate entity that can go out and borrow. The university borrows the money, and then they transfer it through a book entry to athletics, and athletics has to repay the money. Last year, I think athletics made $100,000. The year before, it might have been $800,000. On the margin, when you're generating $200 million in revenue, we don't make a lot of money. And that's troubling in light of what's coming, right? With revenue sharing, with all those issues that are facing us with compensation for student athletes. And I worry, and I would have preferred, but we do the maintenance work that had to be done. We weatherize and we maybe build a little bit more cushion in our reserve because we have none. You know, the only money there is money we obtain through borrowing. And that's a hell of a way to build a reserve.
I'm not sure that's called a reserve if you're borrowing it. And Anthony, the Wall Street Journal, it made reference to, and I had heard about this before, the situation, what happened at Cal. Similar, 10 years ago, they did a project. Could you explain to our listeners what happened there?
Yeah, well, they got in over their heads. And at the end of the day, athletics football couldn't repay the debt. And so the G&E, the General Education Fund, had to absorb a good portion of it, and that got passed on to the taxpayers in the form of tuition increases. So, you know, that we want to avoid that. We've asked the question, what happens if athletics can't repay? And the answer was, well, we don't expect that. Well, to me, that's not a very good answer, and it's not a satisfying answer. I'm worried that we're thinking, well, we'll just go borrow more money to pay off the money we borrowed.
Yes, that is concerning. And, you know, I want to kind of switch to, I saw some of these slides that you've talked about, Anthony, which, you know, does the comparison of the different options. One was just repair, which is the lowest level of maintenance to the stadium, renovate, what they chose, replace, you know, the $2 billion option. And if you look at that sheet alone, it's obvious. You renovate. You pick the solution that they picked. And it's really, really obvious. But until you look into a little bit more detail and you start to ask questions, and the one that you alluded to a little bit, but I want you to explain, that the growth by percentage in the athletic department in expenses for the last 10 years or so, or the last however many years, they're saying by percentage that's going to be halved going forward. Do you believe that number?
No, I don't. Although, Jim, again, this is part of that uncertainty facing us in college athletics. Given what I think going to happen, athletics departments are going to have to cut back staffing because they're going to outsource more. But I don't see that in the numbers that we've been provided. And I certainly don't see us reducing overhead or administrative costs from 6.5% to 2.5% increase per year. I mean, just look at one sport, our largest sport, and our labor costs associated with that sport. That football, and I'll use this as the example, 2011 game day revenues for football allowed for us to pay for our operations of football and leave us a profit for our other sports. And, you know, think about it. We didn't have the television contract. Today, our game day revenues on a inflation-adjusted basis are relatively flat, if not down, from 2011, which is, to me, very telling. But our labor costs have increased exponentially.
And things do not go down in price, okay? We all know that. That is it for quarter number three. We'll pick it back up in quarter number four.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. Fantastic show. I'm Jim Galante. It's fantastic because of our guest, Anthony Lebrano from the Board of Trustees. Again, Anthony, thank you so much for being on the show. You're giving us some great information about what's going on with the stadium renovation. And a lot of us have seen, you know, the numbers, the presentation, whether it was a PowerPoint or spreadsheet, with some of the numbers that were put out there. And again, as a fan, I think it'll be cool to see a renovated Beaver Stadium. And I would be anxious to see what they're doing, but I just question how they get to where they are with some of the numbers. Now, we've been talking about, you know, on the cost side, or let's talk about the revenue side a bit, where they talk about it, a lot of different increased revenues. Let's start, though, with what probably the majority of our listeners are most concerned about.
Ticket prices.
Yeah. They're going to say, hey, I've been going. I'm not going to be sitting in the suite. I'm still going to be sitting in the bleachers. What are you going to do to my ticket prices?
They're going up.
Okay. That was a simple, quick answer.
Then the next question is how much? I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea. But they're going up. And here's the thing. You know what? Institutionally, we had been so relationship driven for so many decades. And now it seems to me we've become much more transactional. On the west side of that stadium, you have your most loyal fans, not to diminish or minimize fans on the east side, but on the west side, these people have been coming for decades, decades. If you go to the west side parking, these are people who will not go on vacation so that they can come to a Penn State football game. Well, what happened here? The west side's going to get all of the work. Ticket prices inevitably have to go up. Honestly, I think some of them quite significantly, because if we do what we want to do with some of those seats, the prices are going to increase dramatically. You know, we're talking about putting in loge seating, for example, that give people amenities that don't exist today. They come with a price. So the people who are sitting in those seats today are going to be impacted. Yeah, you'll have an opportunity to buy those seats, but at what cost? So I don't want to scare people because I'm not a big fan of fear, but it's a reality. The math doesn't work unless that happens.
That's where we're headed with this. And I look at some of the numbers that they put out, and I see $134 million is expected in donations, naming rights, and other sponsorships. And again, I know the answer is this has not been pre-sold, but, you know, where did that number come from? What's the confidence level in them? Where is the supporting evidence? And it circles back to that question of having someone independently look at all these numbers and say, yep, we believe that's a good number and a good assumption.
Well, you mean our chief financial officer's word isn't enough?
Now you want to get me in trouble.
Why not? Hey, listen, misery loves company. Come on in.
Okay, I'm going to dive in with you here, Anthony. No, that's not good enough for me. I'll go back to my analogy buying a house. If I went to the one place, and I went a lot of different places, Anthony, and some of the numbers, they were outrageous numbers. So I kept looking, and it was competitive. And You know, that's how we do things. I just recently bought a car. The first place I went to, I said, look, I'm going to go shop this number. Is this what you want to live with? They said, yes, they do. Well, guess what? I went elsewhere and got a better number. But, you know, when you're talking about on the revenue side, I understand some of it has to be, you have to make some assumptions, but there should be supporting evidence for it. And that should be presented to you on the board, which leads me, you brought up again, a very good point. The renovation is the west side. And I realize that there are some things that will benefit everybody. But is this like the last renovation? If you're on the east side, now this stadium was built in 1960. It's a couple years away from being 70 years old. Is someone in 5 years going to say, Anthony, you know what? This east side of the stadium hasn't been touched. It's 70 years old. We're going to need to do something over here now.
Well, I would imagine if we're successful on the west side that, yes, that will follow. Right? They will try to emulate what we did on the west side. You know, you can't do the same. I mean, the west side has a problem in the press box. I mean, that needs to be demolished and replaced. So I don't think any of us disagree with it. But as far as the east side's concerned, the suites need a facelift. I mean, they're 23 years old already. And nothing's really been done in those suites for a long time. As far as the seats below are concerned, I think, again, depending on what happens over on the west side, will dictate what happens on the east side.
Well, just a quick point on the press box, because that's where I do watch the games from. And I understand why they say they need a new one. But having gone to other stadiums with nicer, newer press boxes,
yeah,
our food is better in our press box, Anthony. And that's a priority for me.
Well, I don't think the food service will change. I think the delivery of the food service will change, because I think they're going to make it a little bit easier to get the food prepared and up to the press box. The way it's done now is somewhat disjointed.
Okay. Well, it still works out, and they also have creamery ice cream there. So,
well, that's key.
It is. I am not going to complain about it. So kind of trying to put the whole thing together here, Anthony, is it feels like a lot of money's being spent. I don't think anyone's saying nothing should be done, but the question comes down to, was due diligence done by the administration? Was due diligence done by the Board of Trustees? And is there anything more that can be done currently?
With respect to due diligence, the administration will tell you yes. But so far as I'm concerned as a trustee, no. I certainly wasn't satisfied sufficiently. Had I been, I would have likely voted in favor, but that didn't happen. I think this was driven more by an internal need to get something done quickly. They gave us sort of a drop dead date, if you will, first week in July, because they need to make some decisions about going out to the market to raise some money to finance this. They were looking at the timeline for hosting a college football playoff game. They were looking at the timeline for completing phases of the renovation so as to minimize the impact during the football season. All of that lent itself to what we did, which was not have an in-person meeting to vote, but rather a Zoom meeting to vote. Why we couldn't have waited another month to allow for us to flush out these questions to get more information, which may have landed us in the same place. I don't know, but I don't know why we couldn't wait, other than the impatience on the part of the administration and, more importantly, some of the leadership.
A little bit related, obviously, to the same topic, but different. But what the concern from fans are during this construction phase, are we going to be losing seating? Are there going to be people there who have season tickets who are going to be out of luck? Are going to, you know, instead of 108,000 fans, we're only going to have 100,000 or 98,000 fans?
I would imagine that's true. We don't know for sure, but I think that would have to be the case. You're going to, like we did with the East Side when we did the renovations, it's going to have an impact for sure.
And I'm sure they want to try to minimize that as much as possible, obviously, but it's a, you know, it's a piece of information there. Yeah. Now, when construction is done, how about capacity? Where will that be?
We're being told it's going to be about the same, that we're not going to have a significant reduction. We might actually add a couple of seats, and their objective isn't to reduce the capacity. But it's going to be about the same. That's what we're told. That's as I sit here today speaking to you, that's the information that was shared with us.
All right, Anthony, we just have a couple minutes left. What's next? When will we get more information? You said you haven't seen yet drawings and so on. When will you and when will we?
I have no idea. I have no idea. We have a meeting next week in Altoona, a board meeting. I can tell you that I don't see on the agenda discussion around this, but, you know, typically we get updates. Whether or not we'll get updates that provide us with more granular information is a whole nother story. I'm sure they'll spend some time chiding me and others who had the audacity to speak to people like you about this because we weren't in lockstep with them, but as I've said to them, you know, my job as a trustee is not to be a cheerleader first and foremost. You know, my job as a trustee is to discharge my duties, provide the oversight, make sure we're focused on our mission. And if I disagree, then I'm going to share with them that I disagree. And in this case, I disagreed with them.
Well, Anthony, I appreciate that you came on to our show, shared with you this information, because I think we as the fans, the Penn State alums, we deserve to hear the information also. So we've got 1 minute left in the show. That 1 minute is yours to share with the listeners, the Penn Staters, anything you want about this.
You know, this for me as a trustee, you know, this has been a challenging period. The Penn State that I know and love seems to be slipping away. And it makes me a bit sad because, you know, our institution has had so much success, the notion that we're driven by building relationships. And I think we've become much more transactional in nature. And I'm hoping that we can change that by doing some things that I think will help heal our community, which is, you know, honor Joe and Sue Paterno in a meaningful way, which is something that people who followed the Board of Trustees know in February I attempted to do, but knowing the politics, I decided to withdraw my resolution to honor Joe and Sue at that time.
That's another topic for another show. I hope we'll have you back on, Anthony.
Love to.
Thank you so much. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.